Hi, everyone. Welcome to Quoted. I am Blake Thomas. I am your host. And today we will be talking about Estee Lauder, which I am very excited about. I've done a little bit of research in the past about this. Specific topic is not going to be following our official normal format, but I just wanted to get on here and give y'all a basis of some information about some certain brands before we get into it, just to educate a little bit. My normal content will be posted after the new year, but I am super excited for everybody to listen to this. Make sure you grab your snacks and drinks, and always make sure to follow me, because if you're not following me, you're not getting the real tea on what's being quoted. Alrighty, guys, I'll see you back in a couple of seconds. Bye-bye. Estee Lauder is a household name that has been around since the 1920s. When people think of Estee Lauder, they often think of prestige or luxury-priced makeup. While some of that can be true with some of the products being sold nowadays, we do have to go back and look at the humble beginnings that started a company that has been around for nearly 100 years, and how it all started with one cream. Estee Lauder is a prominent name in the makeup community because of her marketing tactics and customer interactions. 1946 was when it had all started for this company, but the product line was not noticed by the people outside of New York City. When Estee and Joe Lauder started their business, their product line enjoyed little consumer awareness outside of New York City, but the couple was determined to build a large market for premium cosmetics. One of the earliest and most important decisions that the Lauders made about the brand concerned with its distribution. Estee believed that where her products were sold would have significant consequences on the brand's future and the company's larger prospects. She ruled out drugstores, supermarkets, and 5-10s as being at odds with the upscale image that she had already created, and to which she was strongly committed. Even if they had wanted to sell in chain stores, the Lauders could not afford the large sales force necessary to service such outlets. Her drive set Estee Lauder Incorporated apart from any other saleswoman and company at that time. Being that her company was so young and she had little to no advertising, she wanted to break into a department store with her company. She had already been around to different prestigious stores, but it was at Saks Fifth Avenue where a trouble started to arise, especially with the buyer for cosmetics, Robert Fisk. He had entirely shut down the idea that her product would ever be allowed there. Estee Lauder had a different plan in mind. However, she planned to change his mind at a charity luncheon where she was speaking. This event is a huge reason why Estee Lauder is set in stone as a frontrunner in the cosmetics industry. Estee set out to prove him wrong, telling Fisk that she would demonstrate Saks' customer interest in her products at a charity luncheon at which she was speaking. The event was held at the Starlight Roof of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. At the same time, she donated 80 of her lipsticks to the luncheon as table gifts. Unlike most lipsticks at the time, these were housed in metal casings. Lunch guests noticed the unusual packaging, color, and texture. As the event broke up, Fisk recalled there formed a line of people across Park Avenue and across 50th Street into Saks, asking for these lipsticks, one after another. This convinced us, he continued, that there was a demand for the Lauder product. Saks placed an initial order for $800 worth of cosmetics. The luncheon set Estee Lauder and her company in stone. There are several more marketing and advertising plans that have not only changed Estee Lauder's company, but also changed the cosmetics industry as a whole. Estee Lauder is noted for starting the gift with purchase and free samples within the cosmetics industry. She's also noted as giving women the right to buy fragrances for themselves when it started with her notable Youth Dew, which was marketed as a bath oil when women were not allowed to buy fragrances. They had to rely on the men in their lives to buy them something that they wanted. So when her Youth Dew came out, it changed the entire dynamic because hers was marketed as a bath oil but doubled as a fragrance that would linger on the skin. There was also an issue of only faint fragrances being used. And she wanted to do something about this. Women of that time wanted something that did not need to be reapplied throughout the day. Estee Lauder, being a major innovator of that time, worked on all of these issues. And the industry's all-time elevator gagger came out in the 1950s. Estee Lauder's Youth Dew, a concentrated bath oil, was launched at the Bonwit Teller in 1953. After years of wearing light, subtle French fragrances, American women were ready for something heavy. Youth Dew at $8.50 was a fragrance that lasted all day and all night. Anyone sharing an enclosed space with the Youth Dew wearer felt like the prisoner of scent. Giorgio would be the elevator gagger of the 1980s. We do have a couple of citations that will be listed in the description of the video. And because there's some quotations from people on here, just to break up the storytelling a little bit. She changed the course of the fragrance industry. Before she created Youth Dew Bath Oil in 1953, it was unheard of for women to buy fragrances for themselves. Perfume was only to be worn for special occasions, and women relied on the men in their lives to gift it to them. But by selling Youth Dew as a bath oil that doubled as perfume, Estee gave women license to buy fragrance for themselves and indulge in it any time they liked. As Estee Lauder's company began to grow and expand, her focus never changed. Her skincare regimens were always quick and concise with how many products were being used and how long it took for the consumer to apply. She believed in never selling a customer something they didn't want or need, even while sales became an important factor. And what she was trying to do with her company? She always believed that the consumer base would return if they got the required help and assistance. She didn't want her customers to buy a lot of products. Never sell a customer what she doesn't want or need, she wrote. Of course, sales were important as she grew her brand, but at the end of the day, Estee strongly believed that the ideal beauty routine required only a few key products and no more than 3 minutes each morning and evening to apply them. No elaborate rituals necessary. Really, Estee Lauder Incorporated as a company is not only a beauty industry giant, but is also a massive innovator within cosmetics and social structure as a whole. Changing the way women live their lives is also developing these products that were meant to make sure things were easier to access for women is not only something unique for the community she's selling to, but also phenomenal for the company's well-being. Looking into the future at how Estee Lauder developed from where it was in the 1940s, you see some of the very first products ever sold. Even though they may have some name changes, the product and the ingredients within are the same. Estee Lauder completely changed the game, and now almost every company that sells cosmetics is following how she did it in the 1940s. Alrighty, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Quoted. And I really can't wait to see you guys next episode where I will be following the format, how I'm supposed to, where I'm just, you know, reviewing the descriptions of products and letting everybody know if this is what you should be buying, because some of these claims out there are a little rough and shady. But just as a reminder, I will always be keeping it real, and I won't let anything come into my decision making process other than how it works and what it says it's supposed to do. And all of these companies are being quoted on that. So I really hope you guys enjoyed. Make sure to follow me on here and to follow me on YouTube so you can see my videos. In the future, I may be posting some of these podcasts on YouTube as well. But for right now, I will just be doing tutorials and little challenges and reviews on makeup on there. And it'll be long form content as well. It'll probably be like anywhere from a 15 to 30 minute video. Being on a podcast is a little bit more demanding. So I believe I will be posting maybe one podcast a week, and my YouTube channel will post about 2 or 3 videos a week. And then I will always be doing my long form content on the TikTok as well. We'll post a little bit more frequently on there since it is short form. There will be bits and pieces from my other channels that will be on TikTok, as I am always trying to increase my consumer base and let people know what's real, what's not, and whether or not it should be quoted on. Alrighty, guys. Can't wait to see you guys next time. Hope you enjoyed it. Bye-bye.